In John's Gospel, Jesus says that he is the resurrection and the life. What does that mean? How does he prove it? Well, we're going to spend some time in that gospel over the next few weeks here on this podcast as I play you some of the sermons I've given at my church on the topic. So let's dive into John now and see what he has to say. What does it do to your confidence when you see the world against Jesus? What does it do to your confidence when you see the world against Jesus? When the news jokes about Christianity? When our friends give us a hard time for what we believe? When a new book comes out that claims to discredit the gospel? What does that do to your confidence? Well, in the passage we're looking at now, John 18, 1 to 27, we're going to see that even though the world seems to be winning, we can still have confidence in Jesus. In this passage, Jesus presents himself as the sacrifice, the perfect sacrifice for his followers. We're going to break that sentence into three and see how it works. So the very first part of that, Jesus presents himself. Jesus has just said he's going to be leaving. And now as we come to this passage, Jesus continues to present himself, to let himself be taken. You see that in the very first verse of John 18. When he had finished praying. He's just been praying in light of what's going to happen to him. And he went out to a garden with his disciples. And it seems that this garden is a place where the group went regularly. Have a look at verse 2. Jesus had often met there with his disciples. We're also told, start of verse 2, now Judas, who betrayed him, knew the place. Now, if you're trying to hide away, if you're trying to avoid something that is going to come, going to the usual gathering place is pretty stupid, isn't it? You see, Jesus knew what he was doing. Jesus is presenting himself. And Judas, he takes an army there, verse 3. There are soldiers from the Romans, the chief priests, and the Pharisees. And each one of them is carrying lanterns, torches, and weapons. So you can just imagine the picture. As this massive light comes towards the garden, as the sound of footsteps marching, as the noise of those weapons clanking on the soldiers' sides, you would have had plenty of time to escape. But Jesus didn't. Jesus presented himself. And just in case we haven't got the picture yet, John says explicitly in verse 4, Jesus, knowing all that was going to happen to him, went out and asked them, who is it you want? Jesus, knowing all that was going to happen to him. He's been saying that all the way through John's gospel so far. And yet he doesn't run away from it. Instead, he presents himself. Why is it that Jesus is presenting himself to this band of darkness? Is it because there's nothing else he can do, perhaps? Well, showing that's not the case, Jesus simply speaks the name, causing the army to fall back to the ground. As Jesus uses that phrase, actually those two words, the words I am, he is revealing himself to these people as God. And so with the power of God at his fingertips, what does he choose to do? He chooses to present himself like a good shepherd. Jesus lets the disciples go and he gives himself up. Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me, he says. Jesus presents himself. But why? Why is it important that Jesus gets taken away? Well, that's the second thing we're going to see. Jesus presents himself as the perfect sacrifice. As we've gone through this passage, as we had it read by James a minute ago, we saw a number of things that are meant to make us think about sacrifices. Some of them are obvious, but others take a bit more thinking. John is showing us, though, that Jesus is the perfect sacrifice. Let me show you what I mean. See, John gave us a location back in verse 1. His disciples cross the Kidron Valley. Well, that's a nice little detail there, John. Thanks. What John's showing us is that this place is important. It has a whole load of historical meaning to it. Actually, a whole load of things that happen in the Bible, all connected to sadness. For example, if you read the story of King David, when he's exiled by his son Absalom, he goes over the Kidron Valley. But more than just that, If you were to place this location on a map, you'd notice that this valley is located on the east side of Jerusalem. Well, that's interesting. Well, actually, that is interesting because the east side is just like the temple in the Old Testament. To go into the temple, you go in via the east side. John is trying to make us think about temple here. And that connection is strengthened when you get to verse 2, where John calls the garden the place. You see, speaking of the place is not just a quick way of saying something. It might seem that way. But John is using language there of Deuteronomy, language of the tabernacle, or the precursor to the temple, to the place where sacrifices are made. A bit more explicit now. The servant Peter struck the ear off of belongs to the high priest. You see, John's just loading all of this stuff into our brains, so it's just there in the back of our minds so that we think sacrifice. And as we come to verse 12, the sacrifice reminder comes up even more. The soldiers, they bind up Jesus. They bind him like a lamb would be bound as it is sacrificed at Passover. He's then taken to the high priest, just like that sacrifice would be. And there in verse 14, John reminds us of something the high priest had said, something Caiaphas had said. He said it would be better for one man to die for the people, just like a sacrifice. John had said that when Passover was near, and now here in John we're at Passover. So John's reminding us, making us think sacrifice by the words that were said. Verse 15, Jesus is taken through into an inner courtyard that only those connected to the high priest can enter. Fortunately for Peter, after a bit of help from John, he's let inside by the servant girl who's watching the door. And once inside, we find there is a priest there and there's a charcoal fire. Both of these things are significant in the height of the temple's calendar. Both of those things point to the day of Yom Kippur, or the Day of Atonement from Leviticus 16. Now, you might just think I'm geeking out a little bit there. You might not be convinced of each and every one of those. But all together, just like a painting with all those brush strokes, they make sacrifice pop up, make it quite clear. You see, John is showing Jesus is a sacrifice that is fulfilling all of the Old Testament sacrifices, a sacrifice that will indeed bring all other sacrifices to an end. But who is it for? Well, that's what John is going to show us next. Our third point, Jesus presents himself as the sacrifice for his followers. Now, John is quite keen on repeating things he said in the past. And there's a lot of connections in this passage to John 10. I won't take us to them now, but if you want to look at them later on. But in that part of John's gospel, John has been saying that Jesus is the good shepherd. He is the one who will keep his sheep safe. Just like when Jesus made sure his disciples were safe when he was arrested. And back in John 10, Jesus said, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. That's what we see Jesus doing when we get to verse 17. And here we see a divide in the story. You see, as Jesus goes right in to see the high priest, Peter is left on the outside. As we see Jesus being interrogated by the authorities of his day, we find Peter outside being interrogated by a servant girl. Jesus is talking to the highest person in Jewish culture, and Peter is talking to the lowest person you could get. And as Jesus already presented himself using those iconic words, I am, back in verse 5, Peter is asked who he is. Have a look at verse 17. You aren't one of this man's disciples too, are you? She asked Peter. He replied, I am not. In comparison with Jesus being asked his identity, Peter says the complete opposite. I am not. Actually, before studying this passage for this evening, I'd never noticed a particular word there in the girl's question. You see, I always thought to myself that Peter was here saving his own skin in a dangerous situation. Therefore, he has to lie for his own safety. But the girl asked Peter if he too is one of this man's disciples. So actually, not only is Peter ashamed to be associated with Jesus, yeah, we got that, but also with his people. Also, in this case, it appears with John. So as Jesus is being interrogated about who he is, Peter is rejecting who he is and rejecting Jesus and his people. See, the man who'd struck another man's ear off earlier is left cowering around a fire, too embarrassed of the man inside, too embarrassed to speak the truth to a little servant girl. Meanwhile, inside, the high priest is questioning Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. Is Jesus guilty? Has he done something wrong? Has he been teaching something that deserves punishment? Well, verse 20, Jesus says, "I've spoken openly to the world. I always taught in the synagogues or at the temple where the Jews come together. I said nothing in secret. Why question me? Ask those who heard me. Surely they know what I said." You see, Jesus has said everything in open. We've seen that through John. Go and ask the disciples. It's all public. Jesus is totally innocent. But from the official's eyes, this man deserves a punishment, and a slap around the face comes his way. How dare you speak this way to the high priest? So Jesus calls for evidence, even in that moment, of him doing anything wrong. Any evidence for him being slapped. And the priests are totally silent. Instead, they send him, bound again, to the high priest. Let's cut back to Peter, verse 25. He's still comfortable around that fire. But again, he's asked if he's one of Jesus' disciples. Again, with his same refrain, "I am not." In comparison to Jesus, who tells the truth on the inside, Peter is on the outside lying. And almost immediately after that, one of the high priest's servants, one related to the man that Peter had just cut the ear off of, asked him again. This man knows the answer, but still Peter denies it again for a third time. And so that famous rooster crows. Peter's denied Jesus three times. As Jesus is presenting himself as a sacrifice in the courtroom of the high priest, Peter is outside denying him. I don't know what Peter would have felt as he heard that bird make its sound. I can imagine it all struck home for him. I can imagine that his heart sank and that time, that clock in his head, slowed down to an uncomfortable speed. But that rooster crowing also reminds us that this was always Jesus' plan. As Jesus has presented himself, he knew all that was going to happen. Jesus also said that this would happen. As Jesus presents himself as a sacrifice, he's presenting himself as a sacrifice for those people who just can't do it. The sacrifice for those who follow him. As Peter shows us in this passage, people who fail, people who can't do anything themselves. But Jesus has said that he will give up his life for those who follow him. He will give up his life for those who believe that he is the Messiah, the Son of God. And by giving up his life, he's going to give life to those people in his name. So as that rooster crows, it reminds us that Jesus' plan is going to succeed, even in the place of those who let him down. Those like Peter here in this passage. So where does that leave us? Well, as we read John 18, we can have confidence. Confidence that Jesus has presented himself as the sacrifice that we need. He is the Lamb of God that takes away the sin of the world, as John's already said. We can be certain that all of that was according to his plan. And when our confidence gets knocked, when we're tempted to give up on following Jesus, the people in John's day or ours today, this honest account of Peter can give us hope, can't it? As Peter is later forgiven and reinstated around another charcoal fire, he gives hope for those who are tempted to throw in the towel. As John has been telling us again and again, it takes something outside of ourselves to save ourselves. It takes more than natural descent. It takes more than the will of the flesh. It takes more than the will of man to be a child of God. And only because of what Jesus did, only because of what Jesus gave up, what he had already, to present himself as something better, can we, as a church, be the witness of him. You see, it's our "I am not" that allows us to point to the great I am, isn't it? We can follow Jesus knowing that he has done it all. And we can witness, we can testify to that great truth to the world outside.
I hope you found that helpful and edifying. If you have any feedback or questions, feel free to reach out to me via email. The details are in the show notes. But until next time, let's keep praising God this week.